Hello, Brad here. Just to say we're super proud that the Friday 5pm podcast is sponsored by the Malt Miller, the UK's best home brew store.
We use the Malt Miller for all of our homebrew experiments, as well as tapping them up for advice and binging on their awesome YouTube channel all the time.
That's why whenever we release a homebrew video, we put a recipe kit live on the Malt Miller, so you can brew with the exact same amazing ingredients that we did. The same ingredients used by pro brewers.
So alongside the Malt Miller's nitro-flushed hops, cold-stored yeast and milled-to-order malts, you can pick up recipe kits for our 5 Points Best Bitter, Russian River West Coast IPA, and now the fastest beer in the world, a hazy session IPA that goes from grain to glass in less than 48 hours.
Sign up to their newsletter at tinyurl.com/Malt Miller to get 5% off your first order. With the Malt Miller's amazing customer service and Johnny's 48-hour recipe, you could order the ingredients on a Monday and be drinking the beer by the weekend.
Speaking of which, it's Friday.
It's 5pm.
So enjoy this week's Friday 5pm podcast.
That's a good album by Pavement.
Terror Twilight.
Terror Twilight.
Right, yeah, okay, yeah. That makes more sense. I still have zero idea. I've even watched wine writers or speakers say the word, and I still can't. Like, I don't know what your French is like. Mine is terrible. If it was German, we'd be fine. It would be like Schmechtplatz or Erdschmeckt.
Try and pronounce it.
Like a German.
Try and pronounce it in your best German accent, yeah.
Terroir. No, wait, that sounded
okay.
More French.
That did sound very French. You went, huah, yeah, like did. A quoi sort of noise.
German would just be terroir. Oh, my God. Well, they'd never put an O and then an I, I don't think. I don't think you can say it in anything other than French, but I can't say it in French. So basically, I'm just going to have to say sense of place and the earth's impact on flavour, which isn't as catchy,
yes.
But I don't sound like an idiot saying it.
You know, something I learned a few years ago, not loads of years ago, you know, Rizla paper.
Yeah, I can say that one, yeah.
Yeah, so that is, when you look at it, it says Rizla plus, right? But the actual French word or series of words for that is Riz la Croix. So it's Riz the cross. I don't know what Riz means, but the plus is Croix. It just means cross. So there you go, La Croix. Riz La Croix. Not Rizla, Riz La Croix.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mind-blowing, isn't it?
It's not going to catch on with the kind of people that still smoke rollies.
Yeah. Be like, excuse me, have you got the Riz La Croix? Got Rizla, mate.
Yeah, got Rizla, mate. Anyway, it's Friday. It's 5pm. We learned a lot this week during our video. I nearly said the word again, but we didn't learn how to say the word we had to keep saying. We'll talk about the video in a bit. I've spent 3 days of this week in a part of the world that probably uses that word all the time.
Well, you've decamped to a different sort of field in England, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, I was
something that they'd,
yeah. I was borderline camping. So I've been making a film with Adam Wells, who's a great wine writer. Cider writer, and whiskey writer as well. And that's for Camera Learn and Discover, so it's an introduction to Perry. So I was out at several great Perry producers, including Little Pomona, where we did a film about cider with them. Ross on Y, brilliant cider and Perry producer. And also Greg's Pit, which is a tiny producer, way up on a windy hill, but he's got a really ancient Perry tree in his orchard that is, I think, the oldest of its variety and several, like many, many hundred years old, and a truly beautiful looking thing. And I was making that film for Adam and staying at Ross on Wye, and Albert at Ross on Wye very kindly put me up in his cider shack.
Oh.
Shack is the right word for what I was staying in.
Is it like the Brudio?
It was less watertight and less insulated than the Brudio.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It did. Yeah, I had a nice bed and a bedside table, and I had enough electricity for lights, but I couldn't charge any batteries. So I had to charge the batteries in Albert's house, while I was out in the sticks. It was a murder shack. I don't know why I'm tiptoeing around this. I thought it was the start of a horror movie or the end of my life.
Why didn't you, didn't make any posts about this, Johnny? I would have liked to have seen inside the cider shack.
I took some photos. I could probably post.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, maybe today's Instagram post. Because sometimes we do post on Instagram. Rarely, but sometimes. Maybe I'll put some photos up of the murder cider shack, and you can see how I lived my life while making this film about Perry. But I now love Perry. I have 6 bottles of delicious Perry literally to the right of me, and when I crack my first drink of the weekend, it's going to be a Perry this week, Bradley.
Wow. Well, you're fired first of all, because that's not allowed.
Right.
There's no cider, no Perry, unless it's Katy Perry. Or
really, you'd rather have Katy Perry, than the liquid as part of the crop in.
What do you mean have? That sounds wrong. I'd rather have she's a beautiful lady, but we'll not go there.
I didn't go there. You went there.
You did. Well, I thought you were insinuating.
No,
it. She. I think she looks like the one out of New Girl, who I think is gorgeous, who sings.
You're beyond What's my cultural name? References now.
I don't know what her name is. She's like a 2-piece folk sort of singer lady who looks the spitting image of Katy Perry. She's a comedian lady actress. I can't remember her name. She's married to there's 2 identical twin brothers, Johnny,
what?
That have a DIY show in America, and she's married to one of them.
What's she been in?
Lucky
what,
man.
What?
New Girl.
What's New Girl?
I don't know.
Right.
New Girl's like a sort of, it's like a kind of like very middle of the road comedy sitcom type thing, like Friends. Ooh, burn. Not a massive fan of Friends. It's kind of like Friends, but next generation. There's a couple of flatmates.
It's Zooey Deschanel.
That's it.
Right.
Zooey Deschanel.
Very famous actor. But I've never heard of
Yeah, 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 yeah.
She's an elf. That's how everybody should know Zooey
Deschanel. Yeah, she is an elf. Yeah.
Anywho.
Yeah.
No, what I'm saying is you'd rather fire me and replace me with Katy Perry than have videos about Perry was what I was taking
hell
for what
you were
saying.
Is that an option? I feel like we could get a viral video if we do that. Even if it's just a ceremonial firing.
Do you know what?
We bring you straight back.
Really weirdly. So I was interviewing somebody for a freelance role for the British Guild of Beer Writers last week. And we asked her what her her proudest moment in her career has been. And one of the things she mentioned is a joke. Well, possibly it's a joke. This is Kimberly Pinup.
Oh, yeah.
Crop beer pinup. She said that she got Katy Perry to drink some it's Boddington's or Batham's or something. So there's a very weird link there. Maybe you could replace me with Katy Perry.
Awesome.
But what we should do is replace some of our content with Perry Insider content, because I'm quickly becoming very enamoured with the world of cider and Perry.
I've been saying it for years, Johnny. I don't know a lot about it, but that is the fun of it, isn't it? It's learning as you go along. It's getting involved in these new worlds. Whiskey, I think, is another one, but I can't really drink whiskey, so I don't want to be falling off my seat the whole time.
No, well, this is why I've got into it, because I love wine. But, you know, I never finish a bottle. Me and my wife don't actually drink that much during the week. Whereas cider, you know, cider is almost session wine, you know. It's exactly the same process, just with different fruit. And it comes out between 7 and 8.5-ish% generally.
Well, we're gonna start a Natty Wine channel. I've been saying it for years.
We're not starting a Natty Wine channel.
Well, okay. Natty Cider, okay. Did you see that Natty Wine sommelier guy that ran the London Marathon and drank a different wine?
Yeah, I follow him on Instagram. He's
good.
He's pretty good. He's a bit...
He's got great hair. Come on, he's got great hair.
I always take...
He looks like one of the Rolling Stones or something. I can't work out how old he is.
He does look like a Rolling Stone. But I just always take umbrage with basically... very rich, posh guys taking the piss out of, like, popular culture, which is quite a lot of what his stuff is. But I did enjoy I did enjoy him drinking 25 different wines while running the London Marathon. London Marathon?
I thought that was Marathon. Yeah, London Marathon, yeah. I thought that was at the weekend. I thought that was a genius bit of social on his part. to have done
that. Yeah, I mean,
that.
It got him a lot of attention. But what he doesn't know is that people do that in Belgium and Germany with beer. Like, there are literal events where you do that. So it's not a unique idea, but it's still a stupid one and a fun one.
Yeah. Your film, Johnny, that you've made, I think you should call it Johnny and Perry Go Large.
It should be Adam and Perry Go Large, because I'm not in
it. Well, Adam and Perry Go Large in the country.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll pitch it to camera, see what they say. And to Adam.
Yeah. And then you might get a lot of people that like Kevin and Perry.
Yeah.
They might be Googling Kevin and Perry, and then they might watch that film. And you might introduce them to a whole new world.
I think they'll stop watching about 10 seconds in. it's going to be.
Do you think there's a?
It's going to be a very artsy film, Bradley. I've used our cameras to their fullest extent. I've had a lot of fun doing stuff. There was a bit where I was laid down on the grass, filming up through the trees, catching the branches, brushing across the sun, and the rays bouncing off it. This summer, I'm going to be hosting talks at the Manchester, Bristol and London craft beer festivals, giving festival goers the chance to attend tutored tastings, rare beer pours, meet the brewers and even guided tours of the bars. These three festivals are the highlights of my events calendar, featuring some of the world's best breweries with delicious restaurant pop-ups, great music and a really welcoming party atmosphere. It's the third year I've been hosting the We Are Beer Tastings table, but for the first time I'm delighted to offer all of our listeners, viewers and Patreons £5 off a ticket when you use the code CBC5. Just hit the link in the description to buy. See you there.
Beautiful. Sounds good. Was that inside the murder shed?
Yeah, through the cracks elsewhere? In the ceiling. There was a crack in the door, actually. You could see sunlight.
You were cowering.
Yeah. No, I was... it was very much kind of Blair Witch situation. Why didn't I make a Blair Witch? I could have made a very low budget, even lower budget Blair Witch.
Yeah.
No, that was at Greg's Pit, up in the windy part of Hereford.
So is he called Greg's Pit or it's called Greg's Pit?
The place is called Greg's Pit.
So the area is called Greg's Pit?
No, like literally the orchard, I think.
Okay, yeah. Greg's Pit.
Because it's a place where they used to mix, what did he say? They used to mix, it's like some kind of clay, but not clay. It's like a mini pond that you could dredge this stuff out of that you mix with like manure and straw and stuff, and it made an early concrete.
Ah. Like a Wattle and Daub type situation.
Mayhaps. That actual pond was called Greg's Pit, and therefore the area around it was called Greg's Pit, and that's why the cider is called Greg's Pit.
Old Greg's Pit. He's missing a trick. Should be Old Greg's Pit. Could get some Mighty Boosh fans. Can you answer a question for me, Johnny? Are wild pear trees all genetically different from each other in the same way that wild... apple trees are all unique genetically?
Yes.
Like if you get an orchard of apple, they are. Okay. Well, if you get an orchard of apple trees, they can all be grafts of each other. They can all be like literally clones of each other. But wild apple trees, you can go along the road wherever you are and like pull an apple down. That apple is probably going to taste different from any other apple you've ever had, which is amazing.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, maybe not so much that you could actually taste it eating them, but they are genetically distinct. Like humans are. You know, if you two humans have a baby, that baby is genetically distinct because it's, you know, made up of two sets of genes. It's the same with apple and pear trees, which is why they graft. So you get something you really like, you cut off some new growth, stick it onto another tree, and you get to grow something that's not genetically distinct. It's the same.
Yeah, I think a lot of other crops, they're all genetically the same, aren't they? Which is why you have such a problem with plights and things like that happening with, like, say, bananas and whatever. We've lost quite a lot of the bananas that we like in the supermarkets. They will, they have to change the variety ever so often because they'll just get taken down by
Well, I mean, that's increasingly an issue in cider because they have created monocultures that are susceptible to certain things. And when I was out there, they were having... real issues with fire blight, it's called, that's taken down a lot of their peri trees. I think a third of their trees they've had to chop down.
Blimey.
And it's not something that's native to the UK, and they were saying, you know, they've never seen it on this scale, and they think it's because we've had two incredibly wet, warm winters in a row. That's great for bacterial growth, and that's what's killing a lot of trees.
Shit.
But while I was there...
What's it called? Fire?
Fire blight. Because I think it makes fire the tree blight. Look like okay. It's been kind of scorched. That's why it's called fire blight.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But they're planting more pear trees, but obviously that takes, like, 10 years to be sort of a fully grown tree. Well, not fully grown tree. A decade or so before it bears fruit.
Yeah, a fruiting tree, kind of
thing. Yeah. But anyway, if you haven't tried Perry's, I heartily recommend tracking down anything from Greg's Pit, Ross on White, or from Little Pomona, and indeed watching the film. I've got to supply it by mid-May, and I think it will come out a week or two after that, along with Adam's book, which is called Perry, A Drinker's Guide, and is, I think historically, like the first dedicated Perry book ever written. Because I think...
I reckon there's a few Katy Perry books out there.
There might be some Katy Perry books. I feel like you're working on one. You seem to just keep wanting to bring it back to Katy Perry. But I'm not going to allow it. We're going to go through some beer news.
Okay.
Obviously, the big beer news this week is that it was the World Beer Cup.
Yeah, out in Vegas. I've been watching with a little bit of, not jealousy, but just like, oh, that looks fun. A few of our friends, Radim from Budvar, is over there. Lottie Peplow is over there. And just seeing them posting lots of Vegas sort of looking photos. Radim wearing a kind of Vegas, I don't know what you call it, like a retro dinery sort of shirt. Like a bowling shirt, but with Vegas-y stuff all over it.
Right.
Which I thought was quite fun. And I think they were beer Vegas things. So I think it might have been a beer judging outfit. Even, which is a cool/not cool.
So it was Radim judging
the same outfit. I think he must have been judging,
because it was obviously the craft beer conference as well. So anybody was there, he might have been doing a talk or something. But if he was judging, that's cool. Anyway, so I've looked through the winners. What's kind of amazing about you know the American the GABF awards and also the World Cup awards is generally you don't recognize most of the names of the winners, like flicking through all of the winning entries. You know, there are lots of brands and breweries that we'd know. There's Golden Road, Cinderlands, there's Noble Ale Works, there's Deschutes, won the low alcohol, Athletic Brewing, possibly the biggest low alcohol focused brewery in the world now. Okay, got silver in that. But mostly, you know, it's breweries that we've never heard of. And although they're pretty much all American, there's a Chinese brewery in there. Kumi Lizard Invasion. Oh, no, wait. No, sorry. Read the wrong one there. Experimental India Pale Ale. Not quite sure how that's different to the experimental beer category, where Nbeer Kanpai Sake Inspired Ale from Nbeer Craft Brewing Co. in Chengdu, China won.
Blimey.
I'm going to try and find. Let's be honest. People want to know who won the IPA. So let's find the. Right. Session IPA was won by Shred Beer Co. in Rocklin, California.
Nice.
New Zealand style India Pale Ale. Wow. Didn't know that was a thing. That was won by Wannabe Wallaby, Rip Beer Co. in Huntington Beach. Imperial India Pale Ale, so double or bigger, I guess. Green Cheek, there's a name we know. There we go.
Nice. Yeah.
And Juicy or Hazy IPA was won by, goodness me, Swells a Brewing in Kill Devil Swells Hills, North Carolina.
Wow. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Like to get out to the Carolinas.
West Coast was won by Highland Park, and Silver went to North Park. Both sort of SoCal breweries, and both breweries we know very well and are very, very good. I found another category, Juicy or Hazy or India Pale Ale. Oh, sorry, so the one above must have been Imperial India Pale Ale. This one, Old Irving Brewing, won Hazy IPA. Not heard of them. West Coast was won by ISM Brewing in Long Beach, California. Green Chink came second.
Oof.
Wow, so California, Southern California, we've got to get there. Looks like it is all going on in California. In fact, California is represented in just about every single... Yeah, just about every single one, along with a bit of Oregon and a bit of Colorado seem to be the most popular counties. So, yeah, that's good beer news. And any other positive things before we dig into the negs?
Positive things? Well, I've found on Instagram a home brewer called Western... Heigebrigri.
Sounds right.
He's in Norway, and he posts lots of... I didn't follow him before, but he came up in what I might like. He posts lots of photos of his cans that he's obviously got some sort of way of canning at home and a pretty serious home brewing setup. And he's made one of the best beer labels I think I've ever seen. Like, conceptually, it's, like, really strong. And he made it for his friend Ole Christian's 40th birthday. And what it is almost a perfect replica of a WD-40 can of, you know, the can of grease that you use on basically anything. If you've got a squeaky anything, spray a bit of that in it and it's going to fix it. Except he has replicated that on a can, even stuck the little red straw that you get with one of those WD-40s on the can as well.
Yeah,
he says... It's good, right? He says, of all of my beer labels, this got to be one of my favourites. Birthday gift to a good friend for his 40th birthday. Have a good weekend, everyone. Skål! And then it's got... So his name is Ole Christian, 40 years old, and he's called it OK40. And it looks brilliant. Perfect for birthdays, makes you happy, triple dry hop, tropical flavours, gets you drunk. Drink fresh, do not age. These are all excellently typeset as well. I want to drink it. It looks great.
I can see you've given a high five in the comments. Credit where it's due.
Yeah. I mean, it's brilliant. It's really good. I genuinely, if I could go and buy one of those in a shop, I would.
Well, if you released it.
And it's...
the IP letter would come so fast. He'd have to grease his letterbox afterwards.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Pretty smart. Good work. There's another interesting development from a tech point of view, Johnny.
Yeah, go on.
From a lowbrow gadgety point of view. I actually want one of these. It's called the boring phone, right? And it says, this phone is boring. So I've read this in Cyber Magazine. But it's also in It's Nice That, all over the place. All the kind of stuff about marketing and advertising, and it's everywhere. A boring phone, now without social media, is the latest collaboration between Heineken, boo, and Bodega. The boring phone's transparent body and Neutro, which that's a portmanteau they're penning of new and retro. I don't think I've seen that before, Neutro. Neutro aesthetic lets us know there's no stopping the nostalgia train just yet. That's cheesy. It's designed to take you back to a time when smartphones weren't a thing by eliminating doom scrolling with no apps and where communication is only through phone call or SMS. So it's all about ditching the digital noise, Johnny.
A couple of questions.
Which is... Yeah, go on.
Firstly, given that Heineken are allegedly behind some truly horrific atrocities in several places in the world, isn't this just Heineken trying to say, don't look at the news, don't look at the news? Here's a phone where you don't see how shit we are as a company.
Could be, but it is nicely executed. It's got...
but Brad's got, sold.
Yeah. It's okay, so it's a flip. I'm going to describe it to everyone. So you can Google this while you're listening. It's called the boring phone. It is probably the perfect prison phone because it's like see-through plastic, so it's very 90s nostalgic. You can see all the microchips, and obviously the PCB board is Heineken green, because it's basically the same colour. The top of the flip, so the outside of the phone, has got an old school green LED display. I don't know what kind of, like a dot matrix display, that's got two bottles of Heineken cheersing on like a really like Nokia looking display. The keypad, all of the keys are in Heineken green on a silver metallic-y keypad. It's cool looking, man. It's real cool looking. Like, I want one. It's from like a sort of alternate timeline. It looks great.
Who are Bodega?
They must be a design. They're like a design house.
Right.
They make products and stuff. So presumably they're the ones that have done all the heavy lifting on this project. But interestingly, like I say, it doesn't have any apps on it, right? And they've sort of developed this from a survey that they've done, which is to do with, let me just find it. Okay. So it premiered the Milan Design Week. They commissioned research into the impact of smartphones on Zillennials.
Wait, what?
Of legal drinking age. Yeah, again, another word. Oh, Zillennials. Like, what's that? Z? Generation Z? Zillennials?
Right. Yeah, maybe it's the people that are sort of in between Millennials and Gen Z.
Yeah, Zillennials of legal drinking age in the US and UK, 2/3 admit to checking social media when hanging out with others, while over a third confess to checking work emails. Three in 10 respondents revealed that they play games instead of engaging with those around them in the moment. That's quite bad.
Mm.
I get the sort of checking your emails or checking if you got a message or something a bit, but like if you're sat there playing Snake on your phone, that's a dick move.
Well, I don't think people are playing Snake on their smartphones.
No.
That's what they'll be playing.
Well, this one you can.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so they have solved that issue. I can see it's got snake quick icon. Snake.
It's got a snake on it, yeah. So, and it's got a torch on it. It's pretty perfect, Johnny. apart from its Heineken. And also, what else was I going to say about it? Oh, God, I can't remember now. But I like it. It's good. If they want to send me one Bodega, you can send me one, please. I will gladly use it.
If only it had been any other brand. Maybe you'd have got one.
Yeah, but
Christmas.
It's got those Heineken bucks, baby. They've got the money, haven't they, to chuck at stuff like this?
Second biggest.
Oh,
brewery company in the world, I think.
So they've also said that they're planning to develop an app that you can put on your actual smartphone that makes it a dumb phone.
Well, those exist already, but it'll now just be branded by Heineken. Down. Brilliant.
Yeah. So you can't. There's no escaping them, Johnny.
Oh, there
there's
is
no escape.
I haven't had a Heineken. Yeah. In fact, other than the blind taste test, I can't remember the last Heineken product I touched. Although you're now going to talk about another Heineken product, aren't you?
Am I? Oh, do you want me to talk about that as well?
Well,
I can. Do.
I mean, you brought it up.
So while we're on, I was watching. I've been doing lots of DIY this morning and yesterday, and when I finally finished for the night. Last night at about 10:30, I think it was, when I finished painting. I put the telly on, and the first advert I saw was a Birra Moretti advert. And they were advertising a new product, an unfiltered premium lager. The thing that drew my attention, Johnny, is it's called Birra Moretti Sale di Mare, right? Can you guess what sale di mare means? Sale di mare. Can you have a guess?
I mean salt of the sea, right?
Yeah. So it's an unfiltered premium lager with a hint of Italian sea salt.
It's a really weird. I can't understand what focus group has come up with that.
They were like, oh, this beer is pretty refreshing. So, you know, can you put a bit of fucking put a bit of salt in it to make it less refreshing, please. Yeah, that's much better. Thank
you. Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I'm sure if we blind taste tested Birra Moretti next to this salted version, we might not necessarily know the difference, other than that this one's unfiltered. No. So they're claiming it has some haze to it. Sort your lagering process out, Heineken. I guess it's them trying to tap into beer and food. It does say have with seafood or have with any food or as your aperitivo moment. I'm not sold on lager with a saltiness, really. I don't think that, you know, if I was going to change lager like a pilsner in any way, pretty much the last thing I'd add is salt.
Well, you know, I guess if you think about it like this, Johnny, when you go to the kebab shop and you're like 10 beer and Moretti's in and you're properly pissed up, you can say with confidence to the kebab man, hold the salt on those chips, mate. I'm all good. And then you crack out your little bottle in your pocket of salty lager. And then you drink that while you're having your non-salted chips.
Literally pissing on your chips.
probably feel like you're doing, you know, doing good in the world, Johnny. You're making your body feel happy because you've only drunk 11 pints tonight. And one of them, you didn't have salt on your chips. It was with your very salty kebab meat.
I mean, I'd imagine that if you said, hold the salt on those chips and then got out a beer, you'd be kicked out the kebab shop. You shouldn't be drinking in a kebab shop.
Yeah, I was sort of, well, yeah, there's that. But I was proposing maybe you're walking along.
Oh, okay.
With it.
Right, I'm with you.
You'd need a third arm, wouldn't you? Or you'd need some sort of bib that could hold the kebab. So you'd have a hand free.
A kebib.
So you could like, like a bib.
No,
you
a kebib.
Could strap it around your neck.
Come on, Bradley.
Oh, it was right there. Damn, kebib. I love it. That's a great product. We should come out with it. Kebib. Beautiful. Yeah, you're kebibbing along nicely. I mean, it worked for any sort of fast food, really, wouldn't it? It'd be good for tacos as well. Those little sods.
You could, it should be like multiple. Everywhere. It's like adaptable, so the bib could just hold chips for you.
Yeah.
Or you could have like those little wavy racks that you get with tacos that hold them in place.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
We're thinking this is some good thinking. Yeah. Here. We need to.
Maybe we should call up Heineken and say we've had this idea for the kebib.
Yeah.
Do you want to brand it for us?
We're going to call it the kebib, and it's to sell with your dumb phone. It's another dumb product to go with it.
Hey,
but I do want the dumb phone.
I want the kebib. I'm more interested in a Heineken kebib, to be honest.
Okay, I could see that. I could see that. I reckon, yeah,
because we can even call it the Heineken kebib.
Oh, that's
like it
good.
All comes together.
When you used to go, when we were cool, maybe we weren't cool, but we used to go to music festivals, Johnny, and sometimes you get really random products like a kebib or something just given to you. Do you remember
this?
Things, get like cool shit, like weird hats and stuff, like a boonie hat.
There was always that guy at a beer festival that would have, it was basically like a long necklace with a big ring on it that you could put your glass in to hold it while you made notes
that is
about
a product.
The beer. That is a thing already. Yeah,
I follow those guys on Instagram. I thought about doing a lowbrow on it or something, but I don't think it's got enough wide appeal. Really, it's got a very certain use case scenario, which is basically you need three hands. So maybe it is a kebib. It's an alternative.
Which does
to the
actually,
kebib.
It happens to us quite a lot because we're often holding a camera and a beer. If somebody hands us some food, we're like, So maybe we.
Yeah, throw the camera
maybe
away.
Maybe we need a kebib, a beer necklace. We definitely don't need a dumb phone? A boring phone.
Dumb phone.
Boring that wouldn't phone. Help with content creation in the slightest. But the other two.
Are we millennials, Johnny? I don't know
I don't know. I'm just going to assume I am because it sounds like I'm young.
Yeah.
I'm not going to question it. I'm just going to say, yeah, I'm a millennial.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I want to be one too. Sounds great.
Other news in beer. This is a fun one. So Mondo Brewing. Do you remember Mondo?
Do, yeah, sure do.
One of the earlier London sort of modern craft breweries. Have been bought out by Hogsback.
Yeah, I heard this.
Fairly unlikely purchase. Hogsback, a brewery in, I guess, Surrey, who grow their own hops, make pretty traditional British beer and a lager-ish. Owned by one of the most tiresome and horrid people I've met in my career in beer. Mm-hmm. Rupert Thompson, who, if you can imagine the haunted pencil that is the man from the Conservative Party. What's his name?
I like the name,
thin
though.
One. Went to school with Adam Buxton.
Yeah, what? No, he didn't.
Yeah, he did. Went to Westminster with Adam Buxton.
Are you kidding
me? They were mates.
What, in the same year?
No.
Fuck off.
They weren't mates. But they... Have you not read Adam Buxton's autobiography?
No, I haven't. I'm dyslexic as hell. So
well, there's a great audiobook,
obviously.
I'm going
to get it on audiobook. I know. I want it. yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Jacob Rees-Mogg.
He looks like a... Yeah, he looks like an Indiana Jones villain.
Yeah, definitely does. Yeah. So, Rupert, I had the unfortunate honor of meeting and spending a long time talking to when a set of mid-sized British brewers who would refer to themselves as the squeezed middle were getting very upset about the success of small breweries and decided that the only way that they could possibly compete would be to lobby the UK government to increase the taxes on small breweries, which they did relatively successfully, although in some degree also shot themselves in the foot with the way that it actually ended up shaking out. Anyway, as I called him out in my articles because he had plenty of money and his brewery had plenty of money, and he was investing heavily in his brewery, all while saying they had no money and no profit. And having increased the taxes for all these small breweries, one of them has gone under. Almost in the press release, it almost implies that it was because of the rise in duty for small breweries, and then he's bought one up.
Wow.
So he's literally killed off breweries and then bought it.
Yeah. All I can say, Johnny, is an eye for an eye will make the whole world blind. So, you know, you think you're... if you're a short-termist, maybe like that guy, you think that you're, you know, other people, you get jealous of other people coming up. So you try and step down on them rather than lift them up. And eventually it ends up taking everyone down. I think they've just come out and said the trickle-down economy thing doesn't trickle down. I was reading a headline about that.
There's literally, as far as I'm aware, there is zero peer-reviewed studies that imply that trickle-down economics is even possible, let alone actually happening. But I mean, it's works for Rupert Thompson. Mm-hmm, you know, sure it's panned out really well
Funny
for
that.
Him. And you know, I hope that the people he employ continue to be employed and everything goes well. The Mondo people he now employs can do well, and it's a good outcome for them. But it makes me kind of furious that the people that literally have put small breweries in jeopardy are now mopping them
up.
Anyway, support your small local independents, but also remember that being independent does not mean you are ethical.
No.
Which is a message we talk about quite a bit. That's the end of the beer news.
That was a long one.
It was. I mean, it did feel long. Oh my god, it did feel long. It's 36 minutes. We need to talk about the video.
Hey, video.
So this video, we're back on our over 20 minute bullshit, which has been reflected in the amount of people watching it. But boy, have people engaged.
I thought it was great.
We nearly canned this, didn't we? If you excuse the pun.
Yeah.
It nearly didn't happen.
It was something we were unsure about because it's kind of like more of a wine conversation, I guess. But we thought it was an interesting thing to talk about and try and get to the bottom of.
Yeah, I mean, I guess generally we present perceived
arguments,
facts and arguments for a fact, and try to be correct in everything we say. There is no right answer to this one. So when I started editing it, I was a little bit nervous that we were making too many generalizations, asking too many questions of other people, maybe not fully understanding and engaging with what the wine world would consider terroir. But, well, you really enjoyed the first, well, the final edit, didn't you? And so we went for it. I trusted your judgment and you were right.
Yeah, yeah. It's brilliant. I think it's one of the, well, to give a bit of context, I was driving, not watching it, but I had the audio playing over my car system. And I was like, this is really great chat. It, you know, not being able to see the visuals of it, I was super involved in everything we were saying, and I thought it was great, like really good. I especially thought I actually sounded quite good for once, Johnny. I thought I was quite philosophical at points.
Well, this was good. Actually another reason why I was trying not to spike it, because I kept messaging you going, I'm not sure about this one, we're going to keep editing, because it was one of those ones where it wasn't me telling you something and you reacting. A lot of the time you were telling me stuff and me reacting. It was a very balanced and interesting philosophical conversation.
Yeah, it was good. I really enjoyed it on the day, and I enjoyed listening back to it and indeed watching it now at this point. But I think it was great. Just a great little debate on something that we don't necessarily know the answer to.
Yeah,
but it's great to chat about.
Well, I think we'll dig into the comments now, and then I'd love to get your view on whether you think beer has a sense of place after we've talked it all through. Because I think I've settled on an answer now. If somebody said, "Does beer have terroir?" I think I've got an answer, but I mean, it might change after this discussion. But yeah, what comments did you find that you enjoyed?
Well, a lot of my comments just saying that I'm really good. And I've got some good stuff going on.
Oh,
and team of 44/7. Brad comparing hops to frozen peas is one of my top Bradisms I've heard in a while. Andrew Steer,
just before you move on from that comment, yeah, so we did continue the pea chat a little bit longer, but that got edited out. And the reason it got edited out is because towards the end of the chat, I say there's no sense of terroir to peas. And then, as I was editing, I was like, you know, I don't think that's true. I think there might be. So that's how far down the rabbit hole we fell.
Damn, you were questioning yourself about Peter.
I was, yeah, I was.
Holy cow!
And I think it does. I think peas do. Peas must do. It's just like grapes. You know, they'll be sweeter in certain places, less sweet, different. Anyway, what else did you find?
Andrew Steer, Brad was very close to a brilliant Oktoberfest slogan at the start. If it's not from the wells, you're not serving hells. Well, hell.
Nice. Well, it should be, if it's not from a well, you're not serving hell.
There were numerous people that picked up on that and have tried to.
And we just missed it. The professionals.
Phil Graham, if you don't have any wells, you're not drinking any hells. Mm-hmm. It's up. It's all about those artisanal wells. Lots of wells chat. People were loving the wells chat.
Yeah. Wells are a big thing in beer, you know, because we didn't want to use the surface water. A lot of breweries were digging down. We saw a pretty epic one at Budvar.
We did.
Obviously also there's a water tower at Pilsner Kell, so it's the opposite. I think that comes down from the hills at Pilsner Kell, and then they pump it into the water tower, so there's gravity pushing it down.
I think that PU water tower is the scariest beer place I've ever been. Yeah. Like walking up it, I'm not scared of heights, but like fucking hell, there was no handrail at that point.
Yeah,
you're just walking around the edge of a circular building. Yeah. Sod that. That is like death on a stick.
I don't remember you being nervous at the time.
I was probably fronting it. You went up in the little loft bit, which I thought was insane.
Yeah,
fuck that. Dark Danigan, good name. I'm going to bring this into the Marvel multiverse now, Johnny.
Multiverse.
Yeah. Margate.
With an A, just in case.
Yeah, the Marvel multiverse. Dark Danigan. Talking about the terroir of the mind, I guess, that I was on about. He says, or they say, Asgard is not a place, it's a people. So that's a quote from...
I hope people at home get that.
I can't remember... can't remember which one of the Marvel films, but Asgard gets destroyed and they all escape on spaceships out into space, the void of space, the remnants of Asgardian people. And one of them says that to one of the other ones. And he says, same goes for beer terroir.
Right.
So there you go.
I'm not doing very well with cultural references this week, am I?
No. Daniel Taylor, paraphrasing me, it's the people, not the place, that make the terroir. Philosophical as fuck. Best Brad music ever. I've been quite inflated by these positive
responses. I don't want to tear you down there, but I think that is talked about in wine all the time as well. You know, the influence of the
person. What, a terroir of the mind?
Yeah.
Oh, what?
But they just...
Come on, I've definitely come up with that.
Sorry, that exact phrase might be yours. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
okay, good.
The influence of humans is very much talked about in
wine.
Yeah. Maybe they haven't called it the terroir of the mind. It's just the phrase that you want to take credit for.
I love the phrase, right. The terroir of the mind. I think it's pretty good.
But does your mind have a terroir? I guess that is built up from your experiences, the land you grew up in, the sun on your face as a child, the lack of vitamin D.
On that note, Richard Mierner says beer may not have a terroir, but its taste is influenced by where you are, who you are with, and how you're drinking it. It has a taste of occasion or circumstance. P.S. I'm going to California next week. Yeah. Pints of Pliny on draft.
Enjoy, Richard.
Enjoy, Richard.
I think now that we've had relative success with this video, I think there could be something we could do if we really dug into the science. Like, I could find some papers that sort of discuss how our senses are all linked and how, you know, temperature... I wrote about it a bit in A Year in Beer as well, but, you know, how temperature, light, noise, all those kind of stuff influence how we taste. And we could talk about all of that, plus, you know, obviously the difference between drinking in a brewery and outside a brewery, or drinking it with friends or with strangers or whatever it is, and try and discuss the idea of how much our perception changes of a beer. I think there could be a very long-winded discussion. We'd have to find a hook. We'd have to find a format, whether we tested it or whether we discussed it, to make it a YouTube video. But I think there's something interesting about looking at how everything except the actual liquid changes our perception of that liquid.
Yes,
which
I like it.
It's sort of the opposite of terroir. Terroir is influence the making of it, and this would be the influencing of the tasting of it.
If you're someone who specialises in terroir, Johnny, would you be called a terroirist?
hey? I hope so.
Hey, that came to me. And another musing that I had was about I don't know what, I was just, when I was watching the video, I was thinking about a slogan for something about putting the culture in agriculture. But I don't know what that would be for. I liked it.
I mean, I think that's stronger than terroir of the mind.
Do you reckon?
Saying that humans put the culture in agriculture. That's strong.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was trying to allude to. Yeah, humans put the culture in agriculture.
I love it. There's a very niche T-shirt in that. Well, I picked out some comments that might lead us to hopefully finding out Brad's true thoughts on whether there is a sense of place in beer. J616S said, interestingly, hops grown around Manchester have a bit of an almond marzipan thing going on. No idea why, but it seems to happen to many varieties. This is not the first I've heard of this. When we tweeted to promote the video on Twitter, Beer Nouveau, or the man former of Beer Nouveau, the brewery, said exactly the same thing. So firstly, I want to go try some Mancunian hops. I didn't know that there was much growing that far. I mean, lots in Herefordshire, but that's a little bit, well, quite a bit further south. The interesting thing about that is that I remembered in my beer history musings that in the, 1900, I think, thousands of people in Manchester were poisoned by beer.
That's okay.
When like a sugar that had been bought in by the breweries was tainted by sulfuric acid. And what it meant was when they put it into the beer, it turned into arsenic.
This is what I was thinking, because arsenic has got an almond flavour to it.
It does.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'd be a little bit worried if my beer tasted of almonds.
Exactly that. That's what I said to J616S.
Yeah, yeah.
I said you want to make sure that marzipan's coming from the hops and not from your sugar addition.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. Yeah.
It's a fascinating thing because it says more than 6,000 people were poisoned in this catastrophe, really.
Poisoned to death.
Well, this is just it. They don't know exactly how many people died.
A terrorist attack. Oh, my God.
It's getting a bit dark, but I'm still enjoying the pun.
That is a bit dark.
Because people drank a lot of beer back then, it was much more common to drink it, you know, not necessarily at breakfast, but throughout the day. And because, obviously, if somebody comes in with arsenic poisoning, your first question at the start wasn't how much beer have you drunk. It was very hard to track how many people actually died. So they reckon 6,000 people got poisoned. And let me, I've just opened up the Wikipedia page. So it said, the mass poisoning was unusual in that it was not noticed for 4 months. The doctor seeing patients who were usually heavy drinkers and who showed muscle weakness and numbness of the hands and feet initially thought the patients had alcoholic neuritis. Inflammation of the brain, I guess. Nevertheless, the marked increase in the number of cases was noted, with 41 people succumbing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
66 people perishing from alcoholism in the 4 months after the outbreak, when in the previous 7 months before, there were only 22.
Okay.
So they don't really know how many people died, but thousands of people did consume some amount of arsenic. Mm. So the people that drank lots of it possibly were poisoned to death.
Blimey.
I'm bringing all the vibes today. Anyway, so thank you for that comment. Very interesting. And, you know, on the terroir point, totally agree that the thing is, clearly the ingredients have terroir, right? All agricultural edible foods must, because they will all taste different. Yes. You grow hops in a different region, you know, like UK Cascade, which is a nightmare to grow. You have to pick it really late, which is a real issue in the UK because our weather is terrible. You know, these all taste different. They have different agronomics. There's definitely terroir. The question is whether that translates to the beer, where there's four ingredients. And different styles that put different emphasis on each one. Liam W451 said, last year an Australian brewery did a series of experimental beers playing with the hops. Keep everything else the same, but have the hops from different regions or countries. So one they released was Citra from three different locations in the US. Another they did was Source and Cascade from three different countries, because you can get US, UK and New Zealand Cascade. They also did a late pick and an early pick experiment with Nelson Sauvin. Now, that is niche, but that is so fascinating. And I would absolutely freaking love to do a homebrew project on that kind of thing. I think that would be super interesting. I asked which brewery it was that did that, and they told me, and I have forgotten. It began with a W. Here we go. So somebody's come back and said it was Hargreaves Hill, and another one's come back saying it was Hawkers. So it didn't begin with a W, it began with an H.
Yeah,
there's a W in Hawkers. Yeah. So one of those two. also, interestingly, Range Brewing. I know Matt from Range, because he used to work in the UK, who used to help run London Craft Beer Festival. They did an early, late Nelson beer as well, which is very cool. And Range make fantastic beer and are doing very well, so I'm very, very pleased for them. So my summary from editing that video for a long, long time and from reading through all the comments is that I think that beer all of the ingredients in beer have a sense of place, a sense of terroir. They are products of the places that they're grown as well as their genetics. But there is too much intervention, human intervention in beer. Even if you take away, you know, even if you did like a single malt, single hop, clean yeast strain and local water in the place where those things were grown, there's still potentially too much human intervention for you to really claim that you can taste where your beer is from. Because how we add them, when we add them, what we ferment to, what temperatures we ferment at, there's so many variables, and there are of course variables in winemaking, so many different methods, approaches, philosophies, yeasts, petnat versus method traditionnel, all that kind of stuff. But the level of intervention in beer is so much that finding a sense of terroir is incredibly hard in beer. So, you know, if you put a gun to my head, I'd probably say no. But if we were having a discussion, I'd go, not necessarily, but probably not.
Yeah, I think I'm the same, really. It's like you say, it's the human intervention is so high in beer making as opposed to wine that the ingredients have a sense of place, but all the processing that's happening kind of overrides that, and we've taken command over nature.
Yeah, it came to me while I was a little Pomona in Hereford, because while we were there, we were filming with Adam and James, co-founder, we were filming the four different styles of Perry. So obviously you've got all the varieties of pear, but then you've got still, you've got sparkling, you've got, sorry, when I say sparkling, I mean like pet nat, so bottle conditioned, and then you've got method traditionnel, which is where you spike it with sugar and with yeast, and then you disgorge it when it's ready. So like making champagne, and you could almost see, you know, when they were talking about it, they were like, well, the still and the pet nat is all about capturing that moment for that drink. So that they're trying to capture all of that terroir. They're trying to say, this tastes brilliant, don't let it change anymore. Whereas method traditionnel, or I guess to some extent like force carving it, would be making such a radical change to it. You know, it's adding intervention, it would be watering down that kind of concept. So, you know, in wine and in cider and in Perry, there's a way of sort of being like, of lowering that intervention. And that's what natural wine is kind of all about. It's trying to capture as close to what was sort of in the field or in that tank as possible, compared to, I don't know what you call non-natural wine. It's the problem with the name, because it implies that standard wine practices are non-natural. Well, they are, but you know, it comes down to this idea of philosophy or terroir of the mind when you intervene. I think it was a really interesting video, and I'm very glad we put it out. And we don't have any answers really, but I think I understand beer a little bit better as a result of it, because I understand this sort of new approach of like trying to capture what's in the field, which maybe lambics and stuff do, versus trying to recreate certain flavors through using certain hops and malts and stuff, which is what most beer is. So there's a gradient of terroir in beer,
undoubtedly.
Cool. Well, on that final note, with it had a hint of finality to it, we've run out of time. We've nearly hit an hour. We have a very exciting video next week. If I pull it off in time, it is a blind taste test of nitro stouts. I think I have a lead on where I can get cans of Murphy's, which was the last piece of the puzzle. So that's my job this afternoon, is to go track down Murphy's. And if I do, I'll be filming that on Monday, and it'll be out on Wednesday, fresh as a pet nat Perry.
Didn't you do something good on YouTube as well, Johnny? New feature.
Oh yeah, new feature on YouTube. Yes, so we have finally got round to launching YouTube memberships. So we have had our Patreon since 2018. It has literally kept the lights on, and we love all of our Patreons. But we know that not everybody uses Patreon. Not everybody wants to sign up to Patreon. But you all do presumably use YouTube. And so we have now set up, it's one tier at the moment, literally just a membership to YouTube, $1.99 a month. And that will also get you the same perks that the £2 Patreon gets you, which is access to our Discord forum. So you can join our memberships. And also, because it's YouTube, you get to use your own emojis. So I've put some fun emojis, and we'll probably probably update that at some point so that you can use them on our live shows, which we do have a live show coming up as well. I should probably mention that. So yeah, if you want to support the channel, you can join us now on YouTube memberships. All you have to do is go to our homepage, and you'll see the link on that homepage to join. And that would really, really help us out with running the channel. But yeah, also, we have a live show coming at you. The date of the live show is the 31st of May. It's a Friday. Put it in your diary. We'll be going live probably at 8 p.m. It is with the one and only Baron Brewing, who we brewed with, as you'll remember, last week. 2 weeks before that, we have the tasting of our beer. I'm going to go help Jack can it next week. Week after. And you can do a live tasting with us on the 31st of that beer, Board Shorts, and some other beers that he'll be putting into a delicious sixer that you can buy from him. So we'll announce that when it's all live, all over our socials and everything. But keep the 31st free, because we'll be going live for the first time in a long time. And I can't wait.
Nice. Yeah, it's going to be good.
Yeah. Right. Well, otherwise, we'll see you next week for another Love and Beer. And I'll see you on Wednesday to find out what the king of the Nitro Stouts might be. And inevitably, I'll regret the result. And then we'll have to make a film like we did with the triple one. Alrighty, Love and Beer. The Bubble and Friday 5 p.m. podcasts are brought to you by the nerds behind YouTube's Craft Beer channel. You can watch over 400 mini documentaries at youtube.com/thecraftbeerchannel. And if you love what we do, support us via Patreon and get access to merchandise and our amazing Discord forum, a positive and welcoming space for everyone who loves beer, food, and homebrewing. Love and beer.